The following is a recording of the book entitled Secrets of Sonship by Dr. R. Edward Miller. Through the mystery of Mary, a type of the church, and the birth of Jesus, who was born in the image of God, the author of this audiobook, Secrets of Sonship, finds many hidden ways in which God brings forth new creatures into his own image called sons of God. This material is copyrighted by Peniel Tape Ministry, and no part of this recording can be reproduced without written permission.
Chapter 1. The King Cometh. God revealed to all the inhabitants of heaven what would be the final act of his magnificent creation of the universe. He would crown his works by creating a special king that would reign over all the created wonders and beauties of planet Earth. This king would not be another angel, cherubim, or seraphim, nor even another archangel. It would be a man. A man with unique attributes, that he would be made in the express image of the Creator himself. Therefore, this new created being would be radically different from all the other beings he had made. Man would bear the image divine in his internal and external members. In the book of Genesis, chapter 1, verse 26 and 27, we read, "And God said, Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him, male and female created he them. From that day of the creation of man, millenniums passed by as the history of man unfolded upon planet Earth. Man, the vassal king of earth, ruled and reigned over creation and strove to bring it under his dominion. Sad to say, at the same time, man brought the planet more and more into ruination and devastation. Then, in the fullness of time, came the day when the Creator called the high archangel Gabriel, the preeminent messenger from the eternal throne. God sent Gabriel on a mission to earth with an astounding message from God. The angelic messenger was directed to go to the small town called Nazareth that lay in the obscure country of Judah. There he would find a young maiden named Mary, who was espoused to a carpenter called Joseph. To her, he was to deliver his message and extract from her the needed surrender and acceptance of the astonishing message from Jehovah. In Luke chapter 1 and verse 35, we read a part of that message, and I quote, "And the angel answered and said unto her, The Holy Ghost shall come upon thee, and the power of the highest shall overshadow thee. Therefore also that holy thing which shall be born of thee shall be called the Son of God." In the book of Matthew and chapter 3 and verse 17, Matthew was writing of the baptism of Jesus. And at that time, he was telling that, "Lo, a voice came from heaven saying, This is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased." In that message to Mary, God renewed the declaration of his purposes and promises. The Creator would bring forth on earth, through Mary's womb, the second major act of creating a man in his own image. That holy thing, coming from the very body of this chosen woman, would be the Son of God, the Messiah, the promised King. The King that would reign on David's throne. In Matthew 2 and verse 1, we read, "Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he that is born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, and are come to worship him." Jesus Christ was not only the King of the Jews, but was born King of all the earth. The newspapers of today do not make this declaration. People in high places of government decidedly do not believe that Jesus is Lord and King of the earth. According to the pundits of earth, only the great men in all their self-appointed greatness reign and rule on earth. Jesus, the Son of Mary, the Son of God, is relegated in their lofty opinion to be an obscure religious fanatic that lived in the far long ago. It is written in the book of all books by the prophet Isaiah, chapter 52 and verse 7, "How beautiful upon the mountains are the feet of him that bringeth good tidings, that publisheth peace, that bringeth good tidings of good, that publisheth salvation, that saith unto Zion, Thy God reigneth." Again, the Holy Writings state in Psalm 47 and verse 7, "God is King of all the earth." Still again, it is written in Isaiah chapter 6 and verse 1, "In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw also the King sitting upon a throne, high and lifted up, and his train filled the temple." Recognized by earth's present rulers or not, accepted or rejected, Jesus, the Son of the Highest, is King of the earth and rules this planet. Under his rulership, he brings all things to transpire according to his predetermined will. Paul writes in 1 Corinthians chapter 15 and verse 25, "For he must reign till he hath put all enemies under his feet." The day will inevitably come when the rightful King of the earth, Jesus Christ, the eternal Son of God, will reveal himself to earthly eyes and establish his throne over the earth forever. Men do not understand the mysterious ways of their Creator any more than little children understand the puzzling ways of their earthly fathers. However, babies in the home do not concern themselves for their lack of understanding the ways of their parents. They are satisfied to be loved, taught, and cared for by those strange beings, their mysterious parents. It is enough for a man to be converted and become as a little child. Let his great Father in heaven take care of the worlds and their kingdoms that he has created. Because the small part of the created universe that man can observe and ponder is all too amazing, mysterious, and wonderful. The very privilege of being allowed to be a part and have a place in his creation calls for true gratitude. God always keeps promises. God, the eternal Creator, is the beginning and the ending, the Alpha and the Omega. He knows the ending before he begins the beginning. Every promise God has made, he has already prepared for his fulfillment. God is never foiled in his will, and his eternal purposes will never be frustrated. He always accomplishes that which he determines to perform. He promised Moses at the burning bush that he would take the children of Israel out of Egypt and establish them in the promised land of Canaan. When he made that promise, he knew that Israel was a slave nation under Pharaoh, the most tyrannical ruler of the most powerful nation of the world. God also knew that Canaan, the land of promise, was inhabited by six hostile nations that hated Jehovah and the Jews. The great Pharaoh and his powerful Egyptian armies that ruled the world of their day could not possibly thwart the purposes of God. All the hostility and might of the armies of the many kings and nations that would fight against the people could not stop Jehovah from fulfilling his promises to Moses. It is true that the grace and mercies of God are often frustrated in the lives of many who refuse to believe, just as many of the Israelites who did not believe the promises of God died in the wilderness. Nevertheless, God fulfilled his word and took his people into the promised land just as he had promised. God gave to man a will inviolate, but when he did so, he surrendered not his sovereign power and authority. He is still king of all the earth, in high wisdom and might, power and love. When man willfully chose to obey Satan instead of God in the Garden of Eden, and thereby fell out of fellowship with God, he did not dethrone God. Man's fall does not imply that an impotent God took a nap on the seventh day and woke up to discover that his world had been stolen from him by a conniving devil and rebel man. God foreknew all that would come to pass in Eden and had already made full preparation to take care of that sad rebellion. In 1 Peter, the first chapter and the 19th to 20th verses, we read, "But with the precious blood of Christ, as of a lamb without blemish and without spot, who truly was foreordained before the foundation of the world, but was manifest in these last times for you." And once again in Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 4, "According as he hath chosen us in him before the foundation of the world, that we should be holy and without blame before him in love." In the eternal counsels of God, the cross and its accompanying plan of redemption for man was established long before Adam ever awoke into life in Eden. God had determined to accomplish his high purpose, nor could the rebellion and betrayal of Adam be able to keep his eternal majesty from fulfilling his will and purposes. With all the conniving, rebelling, and bitter hatred he can muster against God and his overruling authority, man can never topple the throne of God and his King, Jesus. God proceeds inexorably forward with his original plan. From the day he created man in his image, through the fall of Eden, and on through human history, and even until now, God is still working out the complete fulfillment of his eternal plan, the plan that reaches far into the ages yet to come. His eternal purpose is revealed. The creation of the mystery called heaven was finished. The creation of planet Earth was finalized. And every part of Earth's development was finally ready, and God saw that it was good. The seas and oceans were full of water and of marine life, and their borders established. The lands and mountains that had raised above the seas were all clothed with verdure, and the flora and fauna all filled their habitat in great abundance. Then God began his final and most glorious crowning creative act of all creation. That day, God clearly heralded to all the hosts of angelic beings his high, mysterious, and unique purpose. He thundered loudly so all could hear and said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth." Genesis 1, verse 26. Then and there, the Creator brought forth the first tangible concept of his colossal plan to create a man, a creature, a race, that he would make in his own image. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. Genesis 1:27. God revealed that his plan included an entire race of men. He did not say, "Let us make a man in our image," but he said, "Let us make man in our image." Adam and all his descendants would be creatures with the potential to be made into the full image of his ineffable Creator. That was the divine intention. The Almighty announced unto all the angels in heaven, he would make a race, a lineage of creatures that could be formed, molded, and transformed into the sublime image of the transcendent triune God. The first creative act of this immense plan was the creation of Adam in his own image in the heavenlies. This the Creator did, and did before Adam was ever given earthly form or shape or infused into an earthly body. Whether man at this stage was in pure spirit essence or in some other spiritual substance is not known. It is known that man definitely was not in a body of earthly material, because God is spirit, and man was made in his image. This creative act of making man in his image could only refer to the spirit image of the Creator. John chapter 4 and verse 24, God is spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. How much time transpired before God worked his next recorded act of making man in his image is not known. He gave to man an earthly form and shape that he might be able to live in the environment creatively prepared that we call earth. But we read in Genesis 2 and verse 7, and the Lord God formed man of the dust of the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and man became a living soul. This second act of God was definitely not another act of creation, because God had already created Adam. The second work of God in making man was to give him an earthly form and substance. God took the materials from the earth itself, and with that earth he formed, not created, what we call a human body. Subsequently, into that human body of earth, the Spirit of God, scripturally known as the breath of God, breathed that created spirit substance of Adam into that earthly body. The spirit life of Adam, entering that body of earth, changed that earth body into a living being. Man thereby became a human being with a living soul and body. Adam then lived in a human earthly body. Adam's body was a habitation of that created spirit that was created in the image of God. At that time and state, Adam was in all purity, innocence, holiness, and beauty. Man rebelled and abdicated his kingship. Man lived in an ideal state in the Garden of Eden for an undetermined length of time. Nevertheless, it was a period of time long enough for him to know the natures of and to name all the animals God had created. Then came that fateful day when Adam took the sharp knife of sin and violently severed his relationship with his Creator. At the same time, he denigrated that divine image of purity and holiness that had glorified his state in Eden. He corrupted and disfigured that ineffable image beyond all recognition. After that despicable act of violence and self-destruction, he cohabited with his wife, and that corrupt and deformed holy image was passed down through the laws of inheritance to all his progeny forever. Therefore, the human race stumbled through countless generations in the sin and degradation of life on earth. All the suffering and pain and sorrow his progeny lived through was caused by the wreckage of that holy image that they had inherited from Adam and Eve. God changes not. God, who is rich in mercy, did not destroy his created son for this great evil against his creation, but began an age-long task of restoration. First, he re-established communion with Adam in the Garden of Eden. And after covering them with the animal skins, he gave them a promise of final restoration that would be given to Adam and Eve in the fullness of time. The eternal God, who changes not nor grows weary, watched and overruled in the affairs of men throughout millenniums of time. He gave promise upon a promise to the children of Adam throughout those long ages. Each promise reaffirmed that the Creator had not abandoned his eternal will and purpose. Then, O wondrous day, O night sublime, in the history of man there came a divinely appointed time. Gabriel was sent to carry the good news to Mary in Nazareth. God would send his son. His name would be Jesus. He who was and would ever be the perfect image of himself. He would be born of Mary in the city of Bethlehem. Jesus was the last Adam who would bear forever within himself the divine image of the Creator. In his divine spirit, as well as in his sinner's body, he would be the fully perfected image of his Almighty Father. It is written in Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 3 of Jesus, who, being the brightness of his glory and the express image of his person, and upholding all things by the word of his power, when he had by himself purged our sins, sat down on the right hand of the majesty on high. Once again, that immaculate, ineffable image of the divine Godhead was brought into being and placed upon earth. As the first Adam was in the form of man, so was the last Adam, Jesus. After so many millenniums, the image of God was restored to the original creation. John writes in chapter 14 and verse 9, Jesus saith unto him, Have I been so long time with you, and yet hast thou not known me, Philip? He that hath seen me hath seen the Father. How sayest thou then, Show us the Father? It beareth much fruit. When Jesus spoke of the corn of wheat that must fall into the ground and die, Jesus was speaking of himself. In John 12 and verse 24, Truly, truly, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abides alone. But if it die, it brings forth much fruit. When the farmer plants wheat, he does not reap oats or barley, but according to the wheat seed planted, he reaps his expected harvest of wheat. That grain of wheat represents Jesus crucified and buried. However, not only buried, but also resurrected and alive forevermore. And being the seed planted, he will bring forth as a harvest many sons of God in his image. In Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 10, For it became him for whom are all things, and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons into glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through suffering. And God is still in the process of bringing forth many sons unto glory. The seed that died in the ground rises up in new life and comes forth greatly multiplied, but in its same perfect image as a planted seed. When the seed falls into the ground, it dies, but the germ of life begins a totally new process. A process on one hand of disintegration, putrefaction, and death, and at the same time, a process of restoration, multiplication, and resurrection. So that seed comes forth again into life, but life greatly expanded and increased. Paul writes in Philippians chapter 2 and verse 13, Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doth not appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is.